knowledge fight.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan. Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in
Stop it.
Andy in Kansas.
Andy.
It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Celine, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are. Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Quick question.
What's up?
What's your bright spot today,
buddy? My bright spot today is I've been playing this game a little bit called The Sinking City.
The Sinking City.
It's a Lovecraftian type of ambiance detective kind of game
of
on
course.
The Switch. And it's pretty fun. I enjoy it a bit. But the bright spot of it is...
The city didn't sink?
It's pretty underwater. There's a big flood going on.
Oh, okay.
Because of the deep ones.
All right.
The esoteric order of Dagon is involved somehow.
Wow, of course.
But the specific bright spot is there are little monsters and stuff that you have to kill sometimes. And the smallest ones that you kill make a sound that I swear is stolen from Eternal Darkness.
Okay.
I swear that is a sound that is directly taken from Eternal. It's exactly the same. It triggers memories in me of playing Eternal Darkness.
It's your version of the Wilhelm scream.
It feels like it, and I've tried to look into it. I've Googled it. I can't find anybody that can confirm it.
No one else is in there for you.
No, but I'm certain of this, and no one can convince me otherwise.
Even
if the makers of the game reach out to me,
they better,
and tell me it is not from Eternal Darkness, I won't believe them. I will think it's a conspiracy.
Yeah, I think it is.
But yeah, that filled me with a little bit of delight.
That is beautiful.
Yeah, because they never made another Eternal Darkness.
No, they
didn't. That was always a real tragedy, according to me, because I loved that game when I was a kid.
Yeah.
The madness gauge and stuff like that was such a fun innovation of GameCube, man. GameCube.
A game that gradually makes itself unplayable as you... hey, you should have played me better, asshole. Mm. I like it.
I think that some of that was a little bit oversold. You know, because some of it... once you know the things, it's not really... The experience isn't really as immersive. But if you're like me... and we're 17, 18 when it came out, and high all the time.
This blows my fucking mind, man!
Yeah. I used to love, my buddy Nikki Gifts would play games like that and Resident Evil, but he is also like really, really kind of scared dude.
Uh-huh.
And so he would play and be high and he'd just scream. He'd just get startled by everything. Oh, great times. Anyway, that's what the scream brings back.
Great times.
So what about you? What's your bright spot?
My bright spot, I mean, unfortunately, it is video game themed as well, but my bright spot last episode was Forbidden West was
no
coming
spoilers.
Out. No spoilers. No spoilers at all, but it's fucking great, man.
I'm sure.
It's so great.
Yeah, I am excited to play it eventually, but no spoilers.
No spoilers. Do you know what? I realized I was playing it, and I hadn't played the original in, forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing it, and I got back into the thing that I love the most about playing that game, which is basically creating a series of Rube Goldberg machines to get one machine to trip into a trap and then knock down, 30 different ones. It's just so much fun.
Well, you're good. You're playing it the way it's supposed to be played.
Like a weirdo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is fun, though. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
It is.
I must insist, no spoilers.
No spoilers! Oh my god, you have no
bye,
idea.
Bye, 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 bye.
No, you just,
so, Jordan, we have an interesting episode to get into today. We're going to be talking about Friday's episode, February 18th, 2022.
All right.
Yeah, what are you going to do? It's...
It's great. Top marks. One of the best episodes he's ever done.
I think there's some problems.
Okay.
There's a lot of intense things going on in the world, certainly. And when there's world intensity, that's when Alex is at his worst. And so we'll check in on a little bit of that. But before we do, let's take a little moment to say hello to some new wonks.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So first, Sugar Bear JB. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Rhode Island Skeletor. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Rhode Island Skeletor.
Thank you. Next, Steve Nowicki's tiny cardboard Alex Jones says the bone broth is loaded with vitamin R. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Big Daddy Crust. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
And we got a couple of technocrats here. So first, Muppet Imp says the new technocrat drop is Geek Salad's bright spot. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat. And this is very special. A technocrat shout out going out to wish a happy anniversary to Alexis and Jared. Many more moons going around, Earth going around the sun. What is it?
What do we do? Moons? How many moons?
How many moons?
How many moons? It's been 12 moons. It's been a full 12 moons since the last time you guys hung out.
Many more moons to you, Alexis and Jared. Happy anniversary, y'all's technocrats.
I'm a policy wonk. I have risen above my enemies. I might quit tomorrow, actually. I'm just going to take a little breaky now. A little breaky for me. And then we're going to come back, and I'm going to start the show over. But I'm the devil. I got to be taken off here. I'll do all this. Blah, 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 blah. Fuck you. Fuck you. I got plenty of words for you, but at the end of the day, fuck you and your New World Order, and fuck the horse you rode in on, and all your shit. Maybe today should be my last broadcast. I mean, maybe I'll just be gone a month, maybe 5 years. Maybe I'll walk out of here tomorrow, and you never see me again. That's really what I want to do. I never want to come back here again. I apologize to the crew and the listeners yesterday that I was legitimately having breakdowns on air. I'll be better tomorrow.
If today is tomorrow, he's not better.
He's not better?
No.
Oh,
what a mess.
Poor guy.
So he starts off, as is sort of the tradition,
yes,
on and sort of the more recent episodes. He starts off Friday's show declaring that war with Russia is upon us.
Okay.
And it's not Russia's fault.
Oh.
Well, I hate to say it again, but we called what was happening. NATO-backed forces have launched accelerated attacks into eastern Ukraine, into Russian-held areas. The Russians, who make up about 98% of the population there, are evacuating. And they're just going to ethnically cleanse them out. And this is an attempt to get the Russians to come into their aid and start a major war. Unbelievable.
As in, not to be believed.
I mean, that's Kremlin. That's Kremlin. That's Kremlin. That's Kremlin narrative.
Have you checked their website?
I mean, it basically, wow. I didn't think anybody believed the Kremlin narrative.
Oof,
no
yeah.
one believes that shit.
So again, and you know, we've seen this repeatedly in recent days. Like, Alex is offering analysis of the situation in Ukraine that's over the top, but like, he claims that Russia's the victim, but there's an attack on Russian-held areas in a sovereign country.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
What?
That there's a disconnect there, I think.
No, if somebody were to attack New Orleans, France would, of course, be like, how dare you attack our French-held territory in the United States, right?
Strange. I honestly don't think Alex's position is something he can seriously argue, because essentially no one in the international community formally recognizes areas like Crimea or the Donbass region as being legitimately part of Russian territory. He's calling these Russian-held territories, and for him to say those words, he has to understand that they're holding them without the right to do so.
Hmm.
Also, I want to point out that Alex is trying to soft-sell the idea that these areas are rightfully Russia's territory, because he says that the population in these areas are like 98% Russian. The argument here is that the people are essentially Russian, so really, the sovereign border of Ukraine is what's wrong here. It really should be part of Russia. They're all Russians.
That's what's struggling, yeah.
Yeah. So the most recent census in Ukraine was done in 2001, although attempts have been made to do one since, but they've all been postponed. The Donbass region is made up of two oblasts, the Luhansk and Donetsk. In the most recent census, the population of Donetsk was 56.9% Ukrainian and 38.2% Russian.
That's practically Russia.
Practically 98%.
Practically Russia.
Approximately the same ratio exists in Luhansk, with 58% Ukrainian and 39% Russians. For some comparison, the population of Texas is 39.3% Hispanic or Latino. So for Alex to argue that these areas of Ukraine are actually Russian, he's going to have to get himself in a weird position if Mexico ever decides they want to occupy Texas.
I was legitimately thinking, like, in my head, It'd be, this is exactly like, what if there's a massive number of Mexicans who lived in Texas and they just said, well, Texas is ours now. Alex would be real mad about that. And then the numbers are exactly the same. There's an exact percentage similarity.
Well, but I mean, it's Hispanic and Latino, it's not necessarily Mexican, sure.
I understand the point.
That's the way Alex would look at it.
Exactly. Yes. We are not homogenizing them.
No.
No.
What's going on here is that Alex is misremembering one of his talking points from 2014 when he was arguing why it was maybe okay for Russia to annex Crimea. That peninsula is 58.3% Russian and 24.3% Ukrainian. So when the annexation was happening, the pro-Russia talking point was that Crimea was basically Russian, so they should be able to claim the territory.
Ah, come on.
Alex is conflating this argument with the statistics that were thrown around regarding the status of South Ossetia and Abkhazia, which is back in 2008, the Georgian territories that Russia believes are theirs. Both are within Georgia's recognized borders, but South Ossetia's population is only about 7% Georgian, with most of the rest being Ossetians. Similarly, the population of Abkhazia is over half Abkhazian, with a minority being ethnic Georgians. Because these regions had these demographic profiles, folks like Alex argued that they weren't really part of Georgia, and if they wanted to be part of Russia, they should be. That was part of the talking points justifying things in 2008.
Right. It was great. Made sense then. Makes twice as much sense now.
Alex doesn't actually know what's going on in the world right now, but he knows that he's invested in creating narratives for why his audience should see Russia as the good party in this conflict, in opposition to the evil globalists. And it shows in the way he's just recycling talking points that weren't accurate to begin with and wouldn't even be relevant to the current situation even if they were. Another thing that's important to bring up here is the numbers of Russian people compared to Ukrainian people in the Donbass region. It's pretty difficult to assess, partially because of intentional actions taken by Putin. The government of Russia has carried out a policy of passportization as it relates to the residents of Donbass, whereby they issue passports to people en masse. This has a couple of particularly dicey side effects. Probably the chief among them is that it allows Russia to artificially inflate the number of citizens they have in the region, and the protection of those citizens would likely be a major piece of any argument that was made if they want to occupy or annex the territory.
Right.
The real-world situation is complicated, and I'd be lying if I said that I understood everything that's going on, or even most of it, but what I can tell you with absolute certainty is that Alex is completely winging this coverage and making shit up based on things he remembers saying in past shows when he was rationalizing Russia's actions against their neighbors. Just the fingerprint is there. It's very clear.
Yeah.
His talking point is old, wrong, and irrelevant.
And weird. It's weird that you would bring it. I mean, obviously, it's for him, it's not like any, God bless Russia, and more just like, I have no skills, and I remember this thing, so I'm just going to redo that one.
Mm-hmm.
But like, this is bad.
It's pretty bad.
This is bad.
Yeah, it gets worse, too.
I mean, the propaganda's bad. It's not, they're not even trying that hard.
No.
It's bad.
Yeah, and Alex is very sloppy on being the tip of the spear on this one.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I think what it really boils down to, too, is like less necessarily an intrinsic support of Russia and weird worldview that Alex has created for himself where Russia is an enemy of his imaginary enemies.
Right.
And therefore he supports them.
Right.
And so any conflict like what's going on in Ukraine, any kind of possible conflict, is a tension between Alex's enemies and, on the other hand, Russia, who are against Alex's enemies.
Right.
And therefore he'll always side with Russia.
Right.
I don't know. It's very confusing. And stupid.
Yeah. This one's a little. I'm gonna have to call this sloppy work on everybody's part. I think it's sloppy work on Putin's part.
Sure.
I think the NATO is doing sloppy shit. The news, Alex, everybody. The only people not doing sloppy shit right now are everybody else who is confused as to why these assholes are fighting a war.
Yeah. And you can only do such a good job when you're when the whole point is like, I'm confused. Yeah. So anyway, there was a false flag, apparently.
Yeah.
Unbelievable to watch the globalists launch these attacks and launch, obviously, their own false flags on that kindergarten so that they can have the pretext for this. And now here we are. And Hillary Clinton, the people that represent her, are basically president now. It's a round table of the Clinton crime syndicate and Obama's crime syndicate and Soros's crime syndicate that are all interlocked, that are putting the world under biomedical martial law, and now preparing to launch a full-scale war with Russia.
So here's what I'm supposed to believe, according to Alex. I'm supposed to believe that a combination of Hillary, Obama, and Soros' individual crime syndicates
yep.
have come together, and they're in charge of the country, and they're launching a war on Russia that's going to spiral out of control into a world war that'll probably be nuclear in nature, but they can't take out Alex.
Right.
What?
How could they?
Like, he's supposed to be the most dangerous guy in the world to them because he has their number, and they've tried to recruit him because he's so damn good. But they're just going to let him live when they have the ability and willingness to take actions that'll cause the deaths of millions or billions of people? It seems fucking dumb. And honestly, they could kill Alex so easily. He's so unhealthy that any kind of heart attack
sure.
or stroke, no one would be suspicious
Nobody
of it.
Nobody would even do the toxicology. They'd be like, oh my God, I'm sure he died just because he's Alex.
It would be less suspicious than Breitbart having
really
a heart attack.
It really would be. It really would be. Yeah.
I don't know.
I will say, they're probably waiting for the right moment. Then.
Sure.
He's their big enemy, so they what they want to do is they want to see everything he's built laid low, you know, and then really step his nose in it.
You're
you know
totally right. You know why? Because Alex has created them in his head, and Alex believes.
And that's how Alex would want to do
everything has to have sort of a dramatic arc to it in
right.
Alex's world.
Right.
And so, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
can't kill him
until
the storyline plays
exactly,
out.
Exactly. Exactly. And then they get to show off and they say, we defeated you, Alex. Where's your God now?
You're probably right.
Yeah.
That is how it has to happen.
That's probably.
Anyway, also, Alex has no evidence that the bombing he's discussing here was a false flag, that kindergarten. This was a kindergarten in the Luhansk region in Ukraine, which was shelled reportedly by pro-Russian separatists attacking from the east, according to Ukrainian soldiers who said that they did not return fire. Russia put out a statement claiming that the Ukrainians staged the whole thing, which is the talking point that Alex is now parroting. We are now in a position where folks like Boris Johnson are saying these acts are false flags being done by the Russians, and folks like Alex saying it's a false flag being done to the Russians, and there's no way to move forward from here. It's just, all right.
I know the war and stuff, but has Boris Johnson sent Putin a box of chocolates or flowers or anything to thank him for not, you know, allowing the news cycle to last long enough for Boris to have to resign?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think he should. That'd be nice.
I was trying to think of what the UK version, because you know, Belgium would have a chocolate.
Sure.
So what would
sure.
the UK be? A crumpet?
It could be some tea. It could be nice tea
yeah,
and biscuits.
Yeah, that's it, a box of tea.
A nice box of tea and some biscuits. I think
yeah,
it's great.
I think that it's very... complicated to like this idea of everybody saying everything is a false flag. I think it's awful.
Yeah.
And I think that it's really dangerous in terms of the precedent it could set, in terms of people understanding what's happening in the world. Like, if you allow for everybody to just presume that things are false flags,
yeah.
then nothing means anything.
No. Once Biden came out before a false flag or attack at all happened and said, we think they're going to do a false flag.
Mm-hmm.
At that moment, reality ceased to matter.
I kind of agree with
you.
But I do think that there's one stipulation that I would make, and that is that there is a possibility that there was intelligence, that there was going to be a false flag.
Oh, no, totally.
And if that's the case, calling it out is something that would be of strategic relevance.
Absolutely.
The issue that I have is that if this happens more...
It's all over.
Yes.
No.
Alex says everything is a false flag, and that's sort of just due rigueur.
Right.
That side of things, you understand, this is how his information works.
Right.
The idea that the government would also deign to get into that game is a little bit...
It's not good.
If it's not an actual example of something that they had solid evidence
right.
or intelligence on, then,
right.
then it becomes... Like, well, nothing means anything anymore.
Yeah, I mean, from my understanding of how that would go, in order for Biden to come out and say, with the backing of the intelligence community, we know they're going to do a false flag, that essentially has to mean either we know that the Russians have been communicating that a false flag attack is going to happen,
mm-hmm.
so we're telling them we can hear them,
right?
Or it is we're making this bullshit up, and so we're telling them that we're lying about this stuff, but they can't say out loud that we're lying about it because it's going to look like they're lying about it. Like this, once we get into a situation where now we're in an infinite loop of, well, if I do this, it's going to look like they do this, and I do this,
right.
and they look like this.
We don't know
we
enough
don't know.
To know what the reality is,
exactly.
but if it's that second option, that's fucked.
Yeah, it's fucked.
But if it's the first option, then you kind of understand the tactic being used, although it's weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't enjoy it. I don't like to hear those words coming out of anybody's mouth except Alex's or a historian.
Did anybody stop to consult us? Like, we've spent the last 5-6 years talking about false flags almost nonstop.
But I wouldn't have
in the context of them being full of shit.
But I also wouldn't have anything to add to, like, giving recommendations.
My recommendation is no false flags. False flags should only exist in the fictional area of Alex Jones's world.
So we have a situation in Ukraine, obviously. But look, Alex is a guy who spins plates.
Sure.
He's also got a situation in Canada that's getting out of control.
They are now arresting and holding without bail peaceful protesters across Canada. You knew it wouldn't just be in the bridge situation or in the capital of Ottawa. They are now arresting people and saying no bail. And under the emergency, we don't tell you why they're arrested. And we have the son of Arthur Poplawski, the preacher, who is now facing prison as a terrorist. They're calling him a terrorist for praying with truck drivers.
Alex's language is really bad there because it makes it sound like the guy's son got arrested, but it was actually just Arthur Poplawski who got arrested.
Gotcha.
So Alex is covering what appears to be a large story here, but you got to really look at the details he's offering, and you can put together the pieces and understand what he's talking about.
Okay.
So here are the essential elements of the story. One, people are being arrested not in Ottawa. Two, people are being held without bail. And three, Arthur Poplawski has been arrested, and there's some mention of his son. The way Alex wants you to hear this story is that there are massive numbers of arrests for no reason happening to people who are all over Canada who are then being denied bail. That's the impression he's sending.
Yeah.
In reality, this is just about one person, Arthur Poplawski, and an article about him Alex has read on Rebel Media.
Great.
It had just come out on February 16th that Poplawski had been denied bail in relation to his recent arrest that took place in Coutts, Alberta, away from the Ottawa situation. Mm-hmm. Poplawski's son had provided information on the situation to Ezra Levant, who then reported on it in Rebel.
Gotcha.
Alex is lying about what happened here and why he was arrested, though, and all of the circumstances. For one thing, Alex is claiming this arrest happened not at one of the border blockades, but it did. The border crossing from Coutts into Montana was being blocked, and Poplawski was arrested at that blockade.
Right.
Actually, in total fairness, he was arrested at his home, but it had to do with actions that he took in relations to the being at the Coutts blockade.
Yeah, he didn't move into the blockade.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
The second lie is that he was arrested for praying with the truckers. That's absolutely not true. Early in February, an agreement had been struck between the lawyers for the truck blockade and the RCMP that would allow for a couple lanes of traffic to be open. That would allow the, you know, some flow of goods over the border. Days later, Poplawski was recorded on video giving a speech at a place called the Smuggler's Saloon, where he was passionately arguing that the protesters should go back on their deal and that they needed to be willing to sacrifice their lives for the cause of, I guess, getting rid of public health measures.
You gotta.
This constitutes incitement, and he was inciting the protesters to go against an agreement they'd already made with the police, so he got arrested. Ultimately, the fact that he keeps going around wherever he stands to get a bunch of attention and desperately tries to get arrested, you know, that fact made the court decide that he stood a really strong chance of reoffending if he was released, so he was denied bail. The judge also decided that his defense could not assert free speech grounds since Canada's charter doesn't protect free speech that would incite other people to commit criminal activity. That's trouble.
Shouldn't have done it in the wrong country, buddy. Stay on this border.
Should have gone to Montana and said that shit.
That's where you say it.
Incidentally, the Coutts border crossing was where the RCMP uncovered a large cache of weapons, and a little while after Poplawski gave his impassioned speech to never give up and called the blockade their Alamo, four of the people arrested at the blockade were charged with conspiracy to murder RCMP members.
Yeah.
Added to that, there seems to be a lot of bomb threats going around. Like, over the weekend, a hospital in Ottawa had to close its campus due to a bomb threat. A woman was arrested for making a bomb threat against the mayor of Windsor. A 20-year-old in Ohio is likely facing felony charges for trying to call in a bomb threat to the Ottawa Sheriff's Department. I say he tried to because he was a real idiot, and you know, he was trying to reach Canada but accidentally called a city in Ohio called Ottawa. There's apparently an Ottawa, Ohio. He made a bomb threat referencing public health measures, then called back and said he'd been shot. But when he said where he was, the police got confused because it didn't match any location in town. His whole thing was busted, and he admitted he was lying and just trying to waste public resources responding to a fake report of someone being shot.
Great.
Because he was mad about public health measures in another country.
It's just the creativity and the problem solving on display from these people is just, I mean, you don't think of convoys as being hotbeds of ingenuity.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they're going about getting the stated directive that they have, which is to obtain they got to get a lot of
overthrowing the world's governments.
And that's how they're going to do it.
Right. So there's a bit of a movement happening where things like domestic terror attacks are becoming starting to seem a little bit more likely, particularly as the blockades are cleared and the protest breaks up in Ottawa and nothing's really been achieved. Folks like Pawlowski and Rebel Media have riled people up and made a shit ton of money doing it. And when nothing comes of it, there's going to be a whole lot of really jaded people who might start to think that their last allegedly peaceful solution has been a failure, and they might get black-pilled, as they say. And the potential of that is pretty worrying. You can see here in this case study a great example of how Alex lies to build narratives. The actual story is just one guy who got arrested for inciting people to violate an agreement that they'd made with the police, who was denied bail because of a documented pattern of behavior. Alex reports that as people getting arrested all over Canada, not being told why they're getting arrested because of the Emergency Act, and then being denied bail. It's bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, but at the very least, it is aimed at getting people who are already notoriously violent and on a hair's knife's edge to, this is terrifying. He's going to get people killed.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, this is bad.
Yeah, and it gets worse, too, when he's discussing the arrests that are happening as it relates to the Ottawa protests.
Oh, that's not good.
What appears to be several thousand, if you look at all the videos, masked men with black ski masks in police uniforms are massing, and they have already started the arrest of the leaders of the Trucker Freedom Convoy, and they are not charging them and saying they're being held without bail. So this is true martial law.
In fairness, the police may not have been wearing black ski masks, but just like balaclavas.
Sure.
Like, it's really cold.
I mean, it's very cold.
It's super cold.
It's very cold.
You can find plenty of images of police not wearing masks or just wearing COVID masks. This is just part of Alex's branding of his enemy forces. But it's also important to remember that even if everything Alex is saying there were true, that would still not be martial law.
No.
He definitely has no idea what that term even means.
Does it matter?
It does.
Well, I mean, to you.
Because he calls himself Mr. Martial Law.
Well, I think that would be the first sign that he doesn't know what it means.
It could be. Also, Alex is just lying again. The organizers who were arrested have been charged. Tamara Lick was charged with counseling to commit mischief, and she's still awaiting a bail hearing as of the preparation of this episode. She may get bail. She's not been denied it yet, that's for sure. Chris Barber is another one of the organizers who got arrested, but he was already released on bail by Friday, the same day as Alex's episode that we're listening to. Barber was charged with counseling to commit mischief, counseling to disobey a court order, counseling to obstruct police, and mischief that interferes with the use and enjoyment of property. So he has been charged.
I am so annoyed by every legal system in the world that uses the word mischief in a crime.
Well, because it sounds like grab-assery.
A mischief cannot be a crime. Nah. It is simply mischief.
It seems like they had a prank.
Yes, you can't. Say did bad things. Don't say mischief. That makes me, there's a twinkle in their eye while they're committing terrorism.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Pat King is another convoy organizer and leader, and he's the one who's made all these public statements about his belief in white supremacy. He was arrested and charged with mischief, counseling to commit the offense of mischief, counseling to disobey a court order, and counseling to obstruct police. He had a court appearance over the weekend, but as of the time we're recording this, I'm not entirely sure if he got bail or not. But he may have, and he may still get it in the future. I'm not certain. The point here is that Alex is just making things up, because the details he's making up fit the narrative that he wants to sell his audience. He needs to sell the feeling that Gestapo, black ski mask wearing shock troops are rounding up all the convoy leadership and the state is holding them without charges indefinitely, but none of that's true. He makes this shit up because if he didn't, he wouldn't be able to create the atmosphere of impotent panic and terror that he needs his audience to stay in to keep them captive.
Yeah.
That's the goal here.
Yeah, it's a little weird. It is a little bit weird how hard the American far right is really pushing this, I guess, assault on Canada's sovereignty as a nation. Like,
boy, aren't they.
I mean, isn't it weird? If another country had done this type of shit, like if the situations were reversed, right? And half of Canada's parliament is like, hey, y'all better go down to fucking America and really kill those guys as much as you can because their government's evil. Wouldn't America do like sanctions or some shit? Like, can't Trudeau be like, hey, guess what? Tucker Carlson, if you come into my country again, you're dead.
Right.
I think that might be a little bit too much.
That might be too far.
A little bit further than sanctions.
I think some of those actions are being taken in terms of, like, freezing the donations that come in through, like, GoFundMe.
Sure, sure.
And give, send, go. That kind of stuff, I think, is maybe the appropriate level of trying to stop that influence,
I guess.
But yeah, I don't know. It is really weird.
Yeah.
But the way you intellectually get around that, someone like Alex would, is that it's not about Canada. It's not about their sovereignty. We're actually protecting their sovereignty from the global crime syndicate that is running the country right now.
Right. No, and I understand, but sometimes it is about sovereignty because that's what you're attacking right
now. But it's not really, if you say it's not.
Oh, I didn't consider the old nuh-uh.
So, yeah, these people are being arrested without charges, even though they all have been charged.
They were all very obvious charges, too.
Arthur Błaszczyk, the Polish immigrant preacher, popular preacher, who went and prayed with the convoy, has been arrested, and they are not even charging him, and they're saying that he's being held without bail. And that is also in the news for the other individuals who've been arrested in Ottawa. They're saying we will not say where they are, what happened to them. This is martial law. They're clearly trying to start a shooting war, ladies and gentlemen. And they're trying to put people in a corner where folks have no other choice. We do not need to go out and start a shooting war at this point.
That's a really interesting perspective, because you really have to ask yourself what Alex is trying to do here. He's lying about the situation that all these convoy organizers and Pawlowski are in order to frame it as some kind of a martial law scenario. His explanation for why the government is doing these things is that they're hoping to trigger a shooting war, which Alex is supposedly against, but I don't believe that. If Alex were truly opposed to the triggering of a shooting war, then he would want to report the information about the protest and the arrests as accurately as possible. Sensationalizing things only will lead people to drawing inaccurate conclusions and possibly taking impulsive emotional actions based on those inaccurate conclusions that they reach. The only reason you would lie like this, with these dramatized details specifically tailored to tug on the very specific fears and paranoias that you've built in your audience, is to make that kind of impulsive action more likely. The fingerprints of Alex's intentions are really visible in his actions here. He wants to escalate the situation while also creating the sort of hopelessness in the audience about any peaceful solutions to the problems that they face. His actions really don't make sense in terms of any other context that I can think of.
Well, I mean, I would say if my favorite guy was in the middle of saying, hey, you guys better stop attacking Ukraine, otherwise we're going to have to save everybody's life in Ukraine. Mm. And everybody's like, no, nobody's doing that. Please don't do that. And he's like, hey, you guys are just trying to make us go into Ukraine and save everybody's life in Ukraine. Mm. We just got to save them right now. That might make your... They're trying to start a shooting war. That's what they're trying to do. It's them. They're the ones trying to start a shooting war.
You can kind of see slight similarities.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
But I don't actually know if I'm necessarily thinking that Alex wants, like, shooting to start, but I think that he's really disappointed that things seem to be on the downslope.
Right.
The climax seems to have been reached in terms of the actual protest. There's falling action now, and that's not really as fun for him. It's not as profitable.
Right.
So, yeah, I think you can see a little bit of a transition over to Ukraine narratives. The convoy is no longer the most important thing in the world.
No.
Tucker Carlson, probably still the most important person
still
in the world.
Still the most important person.
Although we have no updates on that.
Not yet.
You assume that the power ranking is the same unless updated.
Yeah.
He would probably tell us.
I don't know.
Maybe Pawlowski is the most important person in the world now.
Right now, it seems like Putin's got a pretty good stranglehold on that one.
Tucker's
up there.
Got a lot of upside.
I know. Well, he's more of a future pick, though, you know?
So we've got some other information coming out of Canada that is not true.
They've had to bring in special trained police that have volunteered for this, wearing balaclava black mask in Canada. The vast majority of police are resigning or saying no, and the truck drivers and tow truck drivers they ordered to go tow the trucks, they have now joined the protesters. So this is quickly going to turn into a disaster.
This is fun, but it's not true.
I mean, that is the most enjoyable moment for you, though. If the tow trucks guys join the protest, you're like, haha, this backfired on you, you idiots.
That's from a movie.
Exactly. Exactly.
Stupid.
That's what you want.
So Alex is just lying about the Ottawa chief of police resigning. That's what he's talking about, the police resigning or whatever.
Sure.
Peter slowly resigned, not because he was so offended by the idea of arresting these protesters, but because he was catching very severe criticism for letting the situation deteriorate to the point that it did.
Yeah.
Alex has no evidence that special units of police were brought in wearing black ski masks, and he has no proof to defend his claim that tons of police are resigning. That's just a lie he built on the foundation of the police chief's resignation. As for the tow truck drivers thing, that's just made up too. You can find video of police towing the trucks out, and there aren't tow truck drivers forming a mutiny or anything. It's a fun dramatic image, and like I said, it's out of a movie, but it's not real.
I am Spartacus!
I am truck driver. So Newsweek had an interview with the CEO of Alliance Towing, Ibrahim Masir, who said that he didn't want to get involved, but was very clear that his comments should, quote, not be interpreted to be for or against the truckers' protest. His concern seemed to mostly be a logistical one. Quote, my employees are not trained to work in that kind of an environment. The liability issues associated with that situation are just too great. Newsweek reached out to a bunch of more companies, and they all had no comment. Global News spoke to Mark Graves, the president of the Provincial Towing Association of Ontario, who said that one of their sticking points was that the, quote, government needs to first show it will protect the industry from threats to safety and business.
Yeah.
It seems like many of the companies were concerned about possible retaliation from convoy protesters if were to participate in the removing of the trucks. One of the safety issues involved definitely forecasts of snow. That is a piece of it. But the other issue was that the towing companies had been receiving death threats.
Yeah.
Don Getchell, the president of the Towing and Recovery Association of Alberta, told Global News, quote, I can confirm that three of our members had received threatening phone calls and emails. One company was threatened just because their trucks were seen near the blockade in Coutts.
Mm.
So as it relates to the tow truck companies, it's less that they're joining in with the protesters as it is that they're afraid of terrorist threats that the protesters are making.
Right.
Ultimately, tow trucks with their company identifiers taped over participated in towing the trucks. So that's what ended up happening.
Yeah.
People did not form a mutiny and join in with the police or against the police.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't want to be on record before going to tow these trucks that I am against the convoy. I definitely wouldn't want the right wing reading. I wouldn't want Alex Jones reading my tow trucking company's name out on the air all the time.
There was one, you know, that's obviously one part of the concern is retaliation and the safety of people. But the other one, too, is that if you're running a towing company, you will inevitably probably work with trucking companies
in
the future. And there's a possibility of damaging some relations. And one of these articles even mentioned like a concern about, you know, even though it's a small amount of the total number of truckers in Canada, people can destroy your business on social media.
Yeah.
Like, there can be effects like that that would be had.
Yeah,
just didn't want to fuck with that.
Right,
and
right,
so
right.
I guess partially it's, again, just out of fear of reprisal.
Right. I like that America has learned one thing from our war on terror. Starting a war against terror does not work. Being a terrorist works a strangely large number of times in a row.
It doesn't get you the goal you want, but it gets a goal.
It gets thing done.
Mm-hmm.
It gets thung done. That's what it does.
So Alex gets back to talking about Ukraine, and I find this to be strange. He seems to be trying to promote this idea that, like, hey, man, Putin tried to be cool about this.
Did he?
Russia has tried to not escalate things. And
how?
Putin has tried to play things down.
When?
So that hardliners don't engage in a coup against him.
What?
But he's gone ahead and just come out and said what we already knew. There's a massive Western offensive attacking Russian-held areas of eastern Ukraine. and they're engaged in genocide. They're going house to house, taking people out front of their houses and killing them.
No one says
this
that.
Is all being done again as a provocation, just like in the last duel, where they're slitting the women and children's throats across the river to make them come across to lose the bridge. And that's a historic thing that's actually in the record books. It happened, and they lost the battle. They lost the war. We have
to let them. That's what happens when Matt Damon makes movies.
Attack these people. And these people have chosen this route. And I want to pray for them and support them. They're not going to slit the children's throats, but because that will be too much. But that's the kind of stuff they're engaged in.
Oh, that's fucked up. So also, that's the second time in this episode that Alex has brought up the movie The Last Duel. So I think we know what he was doing Thursday night.
Yeah. It's not bad. It's a pretty good movie.
Adam Driver.
Yeah, I liked it.
Sure. So I have no idea where Alex is getting this information from, but I do not think it's accurate. For what it's worth, much like posturing with nuclear weapons, making accusations about genocide is another one of Putin's very consistent strategies when it comes to navigating the lead up to hostilities. Now, to be fair, I don't. These kind of allegations are very serious, and I don't think should be thrown around. Mm. I don't want to minimize them, but this is something that he does a lot.
Yeah.
He recently claimed that what was going on in Donbass looked a lot like the genocide of Russians. In 2014, before annexing Crimea, he said that Russians were being the subject of ethnic cleansing there. In 2008, Medvedev was president, but he too claimed that Russians were being ethnically cleansed in Georgia prior to launching a war against them. Mm-hmm. One of the key justifications that Putin and the Russian government gives for taking hostile action against neighboring states is that they have an obligation to protect Russians who live there who are under attack. The evidence that they're specifically under attack is never really provided, and then an attack takes place allegedly to protect Russians in the region. In reality, it's actually Russia who generally is engaged in these acts of ethnic cleansing. In 2008, they rounded up Georgians in South Ossetia and tortured them, killed them, and burned their homes. In the annexation of Crimea, Russia has targeted Crimean Tatars and attempted to reduce their numbers in the country. Honestly, this is sick shit, and Alex is so blinded by his own imaginary fight against these enemies that he's made up that he's buying into war propaganda put out by a really dangerous power just because he's decided to believe that they oppose the imaginary enemies that he has too. And not only that, he uses his pretend expertise on geopolitics to convince his audience that they should support this stuff too. It's gross. Like I said, this is really, like, the topic is very serious, and it almost could not be more serious.
No, I mean, it's radio hosts claiming somebody is committing a genocide. Recent historically has gotten a lot of people killed. Mm-hmm. You know, like this is the type of shit where you see this. You see all the time, just like, hey, look, I don't know, man. They're committing a genocide. I guess Russia's the hero on this one. Just like, let's.
It's sloppy. It's a laziness too on Alex's part to not recognize the historical trends, at least over the last 20 years, 15 years of these lead ups to attempts to invade areas in neighboring countries.
Yeah.
What's preceded them has been largely the same.
Right.
Threats and posturing surrounding nuclear weapons, and then accusations that Russians are being ethnically cleansed in these areas.
Right.
It's something that Alex has every reason to understand is part of a pattern, and he doesn't. He just buys whatever Russia says because he believes them to be the enemy of his enemy.
Yeah.
And it's.
Especially since
gross.
A few months ago, well, for the past several years, Putin has been like, hey, if NATO expands, I'm going to be very aggressive. And then NATO is expanding, or it's appearing to, and he's being very aggressive. Now, to believe, however, somehow that in the intervening short stretch of time, Ukraine was like, now's our chance to get these 10 guys... that would be a little bit ridiculous.
It would be. But yeah, and you have to kind of even see potential strategic reasons for, you know, invading areas like the Donbass or retaining them as Russian-held territories with separatist Russian-backed groups in them, because that is a check on Ukraine joining NATO, as has been pointed out by Putin himself,
again,
more or less.
Yeah.
You know, it's Alex has fallen for some shit here.
I mean,
and this isn't to say that the United States is all above board in terms of their actions in this circumstance.
Totally.
But Alex has fallen for some dumb shit here.
Yeah, I mean, it's just on a level of like, I the fucked up instigators are all around, and I don't understand any of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I do understand that it's pretty clear Putin's goal is to keep NATO away.
Mm-hmm.
Putin is the only person trying to win a thing.
Mm.
Everybody else right now is trying to keep him from winning that thing. That's it. It seems like a very simple game.
But it also doesn't seem like there is a winning state, really.
No, there's not pushing it back for another few years until NATO does a different thing or Russia does a different thing.
It seems like that could be the case.
It is, basically.
So we're going to jump off these geopolitical issues vis-a-vis Ukraine and Canada and get into some of Alex's revelations of his own past.
I remember 30-plus years ago, before I was even on air, reading patriot publications like the New American from the John Birch Society and actually going to the library and getting the books that they were quoting by Zbigniew Brzezinski, by people like Carol Quigley, like people like Cecil Rhodes, and reading it and seeing that they indeed said they would do these things.
This is important, because if Alex is to be believed here, then essentially all of his conspiracy theories and all of his supposed knowledge of the world is rooted in the John Birch Society. He read their stupid magazine and then pretended to go read the books they were citing. I can guarantee 100% he never read those books. He has absolutely no ability to discuss what they're about beyond prepackaged talking points that probably came from the John Birch materials that he learned about the books from in the first place.
Yeah.
That's all he knows about these books.
Well, there's no way that the John Birch Society is going to tell you about these books without severely coloring your impression of what they are going to be before you ever read them.
That is true.
Yeah.
Simply put, there's an argument to be made that Alex's entire career has been one long, occasionally entertaining charade where a guy pretends to know stuff, but really, he's just yelling about stuff he read in his dad's red-baiting magazines. Honestly, this makes sense, and it's what we've kind of suspected and known. Mm. The New American is painfully written in a deeply bigoted extreme right-wing publication, and Alex is probably reading it on a regular basis at a time before his brain matured to a point where he could assess the information on the pages. Reading over some of the article titles from their issues from like 1994 basically reads like a call sheet for all of Alex's early narratives. Here are some titles. Pushing for a World Currency. Gun Grabbers Global Gestapo.
Ooh.
Supplanting Mom and Dad.
Oh, no!
The article does not mention Purple Penguins.
Oh, well, then what's the point?
In 1995, the magazine got obsessed with OKC conspiracy theories,
sure,
dedicating multiple issues to the bullshit kind of stuff that Alex cites all the time. They had an issue that was so virulently anti-immigrant that they had to offset it by including an article titled, quote, Six Great Immigrants.
Wow.
It's balanced.
That's the balance. That's comical.
Yeah.
That is, somebody should have just been like, guys, let's just, this is even worse.
Yeah.
This is worse.
This is telling.
This is bad.
This shows that we know what we're doing.
This is us being like, yeah, guess what? We're evil. Wow.
So one of the things that's important to understand, too, is that the John Birch Society and their publications largely treated the civil rights movement as a communist conspiracy. They treated the push to end apartheid in South Africa and Rhodesia as communist conspiracies. They treat any instance of people who aren't white men demanding rights as a communist conspiracy. And this is the intellectual tradition that Alex filters the world through. It's not racism, it's just they don't like communism. Like, yeah. What an absolute loser.
Yeah.
This is where it all started for him. John Birch shit.
It seems weird to me that you can just get away with the same way of pretending not to be racist for so long. You know, like the Birchers have been around being racist since people were allowed to just throw the N-word around for fun.
But I think a large part of it is because they were so reviled and no one liked them that they disappeared for a long stretch.
Sure.
And people forgot that they're fucking idiots.
Right. Brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
So, Alex, this is so stupid.
Read 1984. That's a communist that got to the highest levels of it. George Orwell, Eric Blair.
Interesting. and interesting found out start.
How real it was and how they planned to only hurt people.
Interesting start.
And he'd worked with the communists in the Spanish Civil War before that, but it took him 20 years of working with the communists to get to the highest levels and to learn British intelligence was funding Stalin.
Was that
the U.S. Army was funding Stalin even before World War II? Just like McCarthy found out about it.
Oh.
It's a long-term authoritarian plan. And Klaus Schwab is just the latest front man of this. Head of the Bilderberg Group, now head of the Davos Group.
It's a fun story about George Orwell, but Alex is just making that shit up. Also, the Davos Group isn't a thing, and Klaus Schwab didn't just get made head of it. Davos is the name of the meeting of the World Economic Forum, which Schwab founded in 1971. He started it. Alex has just recently learned about him.
Yeah, but they just named him the head.
You're right.
They just
because
named
Alex
him.
Learned his name they recently.
No. He didn't need a name whenever he was founding it, but now that they've been found, they got to name him.
Alex has yelled about the Davos Group for fucking ever.
Yeah, sure.
And Klaus Schwab is a name that has never appeared on his website until very recently. Mm. He never would talk. It's not a name of any of his villains.
No.
Such bullshit.
We've traveled through 20-odd years of his past at this point, and I have yet to hear him say, Klaus Schwab is also the originator behind all of this next to Bill Gates and Rothschilds.
You'll hear talk of the World Economic Forum,
sure.
But no real interest in who the people in it are.
Yeah.
Because I think that if you get specific about stuff, it's not really all that effective, and people kind of get confused and lost in the details. But if you say something like Davos Group,
sure,
then your mind can go to a smoky boardroom
right.
You know, shadowy people sitting around making decisions.
Yeah, and if you name one name too many times, then that person quits. Then you have to. Then it's news that they quit, and who did they replace?
You're committed to like them being too important to the narrative.
Yeah.
It's true. So anyway, George Orwell story made up. Also, terrible news coming out of the UK.
Prince Charles has pledged himself 4 months ago to a worldwide war against humanity for depopulation and a worldwide collapse in the Great Reset. And he will be the King of England soon. And I love how he fell down when he went up to the podium. He fell on his face.
Haha. Obviously, Prince Charles did not pledge himself to a war against humanity.
I don't recall him being down upon his knees calling for the power of Satan to help him smite his enemies, but...
That didn't happen. But also, he's probably not going to be king, and even if he is, he won't be for long.
Yeah.
So who cares?
He's real dead.
He's 74, and Elizabeth could fuck around and outlive him, but, you know, then again, this morning when we're recording this, we did learn that the Queen has COVID.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah.
Also, the monarchy is mostly symbolic and ceremonial.
I'm really going to get into that one pretty hard. I don't care if the prince says that he's going to demand a world war because, again, not actually.
I think it would be bad for
morale.
It'd be super
bad. Oh, no, it'd be real bad.
It would be a bad sign. But, like, imagining a scenario where Prince Charles has called for a war against humanity. Him being king or not would have no effect on his ability to pull that off.
No, it would. The only people who would feel bad are the British because they would have to seriously reevaluate their relationship with the monarchy.
They don't like Prince Charles that much to begin with.
No,
his,
they don't.
His approval ratings are much lower than Elizabeth.
Well, he's a big racist piece of shit, so there's that.
I think that there would be a large part of the public that would be far more interested in William becoming king.
Yeah.
Just skip Charles.
Just get rid of him.
Yeah.
Did we need him?
Yeah.
Come on.
You could see serious public pressure for him to abdicate if he were to ascend.
Yeah, like he's not a great guy.
No. And I don't think it's even in his interest to be king for a short period of time.
No.
And be in turmoil where people don't like him.
Nobody likes him. Yeah. He's not even married into it. Nobody wants him to be king. Get out of here.
You run the risk of losing Scotland.
Which, amazingly, you still have.
Right. So, we got some more thoughts about Prince Charles here. Alex is sort of rambling about how he's going to destroy Prince Charles. And
sure. Oof. Get him.
We hate you.
Get him.
Who you are. We reject you. But we don't fight you because we hate you. We fight you because we love our children and love innocence. And we, with God's power, will break you. You will not break us. We will break you. Situation is deteriorating incredibly fast with Russia. Biden reiterates the commitment to attack Russia.
What? I'm sorry, what?
Russia
wait.
Fights back in
hold
any
up.
Way.
Hold up.
While NATO takes the country over and ethnically kills Russians. Ethnically cleanses. So there you go. They kept telling you the war is coming, and of course it is. The West has launched it.
So this is how Alex reports the news. But what actually happened is that Biden came out and said that he was convinced that Putin had decided to invade Ukraine.
Yeah.
He never said that he was reiterating that the U.S. was going to attack Russia. And in fact, almost all of his comments have been about how we're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
On Friday, he even said, quote, make no mistake, if Russia pursues its plans, it will be responsible for a catastrophic and needless war of choice. The United States and our allies are prepared to defend every inch of NATO territory from any threat to our collective security as well. We also will not send troops to fight in Ukraine, but we will continue to support the Ukrainian people.
Yeah.
He was literally saying the opposite of what Alex is reporting and just said that he would impose sanctions if Russia decided to invade.
Yeah.
The reason that there's a disconnect here is likely because Alex is getting all of his information from really disreputable pro-Putin outlets that share his outlook on the world.
That would make sense.
I would think that's what's going on.
It would be, because, and I'm not like so far outside of the media sphere that I'm unconnected, but I have not heard anyone calling for ethnic cleansing of Russia. I have just not heard it from anyone.
So there's something going on here, and that is that the globalists,
mm-hmm.
they want Russia back. They want to take over Russia. And so here's Alex talking about that in a kind of disgusting clip.
Yeah.
The globalists have lost Russia. They want to retake it. For 85 years, they got to rape the children and put people in gulags and rape your wives and torture. Now they, oh, that's Canada's there now. They brought in their special police. You know, they're UN. The UN, everywhere they go, rape and murder. The C-130s land in any country, including Europe. They load those women and children on who've never seen again. They go into the hungry arms of Klaus Schwab. That's who they are. They see us as lower than worms. We are meat on the table to them. They devour us because we will not see them for the monsters they are. We will not find God again and pray for guidance and say, I will not be your slave. I will not submit to you. And because we will not wake up to the fact that they are evil, because we won't take the black pill and realize that things are bad and we got to stop it, they could win. But God won't let that happen. You'll wake up one time or another.
So it's a bit of a tell that Alex is actually using terms like black pill on air.
Yikes.
He wants violence.
Yeah, that's what the pill is.
That's part of it.
That's the big
so
part.
So the red pill is a term that gets thrown around and has connotations about awakening and realizing something new about the world around you. Conversely, the black pill is fucking nihilism. It's a term that has a specific meaning, and, you know, that is that the world is too screwed to be saved or changed. And it was particularly popular among incel communities. Taking the black pill for them meant realizing that there's no chance of their circumstances changing and that they were hopeless, which had the effect of leading some to commit acts of mass murder. In the political context, taking the black pill is a route to domestic terrorism. That's what is being promoted. Also, a lot of that rant there, like especially the meat on the table stuff that Alex is doing, that's just him referencing the fake document Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. It was a hoax document that Bill Cooper published in Behold a Pale Horse, and Alex thinks it's real. Anyway, this is some bad stuff, and the sort of mentalities that Alex is encouraging in his audience is a really dangerous kind of combination of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's gross. The way he's tugging on people's emotional heartstrings with, like, they're going to land these planes and take your kids for Klaus Schwab to assault. It's just fucked up.
I mean, it is like, we've just watched these motherfuckers kill hundreds of thousands through lies, bullshit, and inaction, and fucking exacerbating things with the worst action that you can do. And rather than face any consequences for that, they just get to smooth right on over into trying to get people killed with guns instead of disease.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how it's allowed to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Cool.
So, Alex has some fake things to say about AMLO, the president of Mexico.
Sure, it's about time. I haven't heard from him in a while.
This is such a bizarre thing for Alex to say.
I mean, Mexico's got its problems, but it likes to be its own country and sovereign. Mexico runs its own show, pretty much. got big problems. But they're elites that run it. It's like, this is our thing. The Mexican socialist president said the vaccine's a scam, a power grab. You know, don't go along with it. We don't want the Great Reset here. We don't want to make our people poor. We don't want to build back better. He says that. You ever seen that on the news?
So this is a direct contradiction of so many narratives about immigration that Alex has spread over the years. If you're one of his listeners and you hear that Mexico does its own thing and isn't involved with the globalists, that should be a cold splash of water across your face that Alex is making everything up.
They've been trying to work with the globalists to take back Texas this whole time or whatever.
Reconquista.
They were part of building the big road in Endgame of 2008,
No. Also, you didn't see those things on the news that Alex is talking about because they didn't happen.
Right.
Mexican President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador has been vaccinated and boosted, although he has been skeptical of lockdown measures taken by other countries that he has seen as being fairly excessive. That is a fair point. He's also gotten COVID twice, so maybe some measures might be wise.
Hmm.
I can find no evidence that he said those things about the Great Reset or Build Back Better, which I don't even think are things that Alex could define at this point.
We demand that Nancy Pelosi stop the Build Back Better legislation from Mexico. What? Why are they mad at me?
What are these things? What does it mean to Alex? What is the Great Reset?
It's whenever everybody's all white and then they're not.
What is Build Back Better?
And when you build things after white people are gone.
Really weird. So Alex says,
wouldn't be a lie.
Alex has these strange thoughts about the president of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's going to say some things about Klaus Schwab and the deputy prime minister of Canada.
And that's what's happening in Europe, is becoming a failed system. And what does Klaus Schwab say? We're creating a post-industrial world. We're getting rid of the social contract. We're getting rid of civilization. We are going to build back better after we collapse it under Cloud Bivin. These are freaking statements out of him.
They're not.
And his grandfather was the fourth largest manager of arms for the Nazis.
What?
Christia Freeland's father was the direct captain of Joseph Goebbels and ran propaganda in multiple occupied nations under Nazi Germany. Of course she works for Klaus Schwab.
You could hear the way that Alex was like grasping at things,
yeah,
trying to pull details.
Come on, man.
So Chrystia Freeland is the Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, and she started to become a bit of a target for the truck convoy supporters. So now Alex has learned who she is and is getting in on the act of attacking her. You can kind of see how Alex is half remembering something and trying to smear Freeland, but he can't quite remember what he's supposed to be mad about. So Freeland's father, Donald Freeland, was a farmer in Alberta. Based on her age, it seems unlikely that her father would have been old enough to be Goebbels' right-hand man.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
How old is she?
I don't know, but the time doesn't match up.
Okay.
Her mother was named Helena Freeland, and she was actually born in Bavaria, Germany. She was born in 1946, though, so I don't think she was involved in Hitler's war effort. Her father, Mikhailo Chomiak, was the editor-in-chief of an anti-Semitic publication called Krakow News.
Ah!
That was distributed around Nazi-occupied territory.
Got him!
So one of the things that's really interesting about this story is that it seems like Chomiak's descendants have done a lot of wrestling with what this guy did. For instance, Freeland's uncle, history professor John Paul Himka, has written published articles about his father-in-law's connection with the paper, and Freeland is even credited as assisting in one of them.
Mm.
A person isn't inherently responsible for the things that their parents or grandparents did, particularly when they make an effort to learn from that history. I don't feel like the grandchildren of Nazis need to be condemned for the actions of their grandparents unless they're Nazis themselves, which is scant evidence to suggest Freeland is.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is going to work.
Yeah.
As for Klaus Schwab, his father worked at a plant called Escher Weiss AG, which mostly made turbines. They did supply the Nazis during the war, but they weren't their top weapons supplier or fourth top arms, whatever. Also, his family repatriated to Switzerland during the war.
Yeah. I mean, that's,
so they fled.
Yeah, it's like, what are we going to be mad at, like Volkswagen or something for helping the Nazis?
Maybe the business itself, but someone who worked at Volkswagen, I would wonder about the level of their culpability.
Mm-hmm.
And also someone who worked at Volkswagen who fled the country during the war.
Yeah.
I would think that possibly they have less culpability than Alex is trying to assign, for sure.
Yeah, it would be an interesting, like, like down the line employees. I'm not saying this is a good idea, but like 1938 Ford and 1938 Volkswagen, who's more anti-Semitic? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a good question.
Sure.
It's not a good question. It's a bad question, but it's an interesting question.
Let's have an like a season of cereal about
Let's it. Let's just get each name. Yeah. Anti or pro-Semitic?
So what Alex is doing in that clip there, it's a fun game to exaggerate all this stuff and grasp at straws to attack his supposed enemies. But rest assured, he's only doing that because the alternative is working hard to come up with actual points, and he's not going to do that. He's going the lazy route, and he can't even get the details of the lazy route right. He's talking about Freeland's dad and Schwab's grandfather, got those backwards, can't even remember the details of what each one did. It's horseshit.
It's so weird. It's so weird because if I knew that my words and actions and deeds could potentially get somebody killed, I would be far more specific about them. You know what I'm saying?
I think it would be a responsibility, too.
I would like to know details before I just said, hey, to all of my millions of murder targets, this is one.
When you're talking about stuff like this, I do believe that you have a higher level of responsibility than someone talking shit.
Yeah.
So Alex has demonstrated pretty clearly that he's on Russia's side, and no matter what they do, is they're in the right vis-a-vis Ukraine and the Donbass.
To the point of claiming a fictitious genocide is happening.
In 2014, he was on board with their annexation of Crimea.
Right.
For fairly similar reasons. Now, this was troubling.
And so now we know it's a Western offensive into Ukraine, pushing ethnic Russians out, trying to elicit a response by Putin. Like we saw in Georgia in 2008. And that's what's happening.
That seems to be a little bit weird.
I mean, that's not good.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it seems to be just like a really consistent thing. He's just like, if he's saying that Russia was the good guys in 2008.
Yeah. Yeah, you're real
gone.
Bad. Yeah. That's real bad. Yeah.
Anyway, that's where he's at.
I mean, that seems so weird to me. Like, I can understand people taking the anti-NATO side of like, well, you guys shouldn't have. I mean, you've said in the 90s or whatever, you're not going to try and expand. And then now Ukraine's starting to talk. And I get why because Russia has to have a response. They can't just have no response to this. Otherwise, they're basically ceding any kind of power in the global stage whatsoever. But you can't be like, Russia's telling the truth. No.
Right.
No.
And the Western aggression forced them to go to war in Georgia.
Yeah, come on, man.
It's
come on.
A little.
We can do a lot of shit, but that is too far.
It's a little much.
Yeah.
So Alex has Artur Pawlowski's son come on the show and talk about how, you know, his unjust arrest
and what have you.
Right. This struck my ears as weird.
And it's just amazing under the civil emergency to hold your father until March 11th without bail, without bond, for thought crime. And we aired his speech here on the show back when he gave it to the truckers about following their conscience and standing up for what's right. And when we saw black people with white people and others say no to being told they had to sit at the back of a bus or no that they couldn't go in and to a restaurant and order food. They had to go to the back window and get it out. Now we're told unvaccinated, you got to go to the back window. It's the same crap again. And, oh, you can't come in the restaurant. Or, oh, you can't be on the bus, period. It's wrong. And it's particularly black folks around the U.S. that see that. They're the main group getting arrested in places like L.A. and New York. Like over 90% of those getting arrested are black, refusing to take the damn shot. They're not stupid.
You can hand wave away all of this by reminding Alex that his intellectual tradition that he belongs to and all of his heroes were the ones fighting super aggressively to allow businesses to continue forcing black people to get food from those back windows.
Fuck, he's still fighting hard to get banks to be fine not giving black people loans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's still doing it.
His heroes in the John Birch Society and people like Gary Allen wrote articles and pamphlets about how the sit-ins at lunch counters were a nefarious communist conspiracy meant to overthrow the country. So Alex could just calm the fuck down with his lionizing of the civil rights movement and its victories. If he'd been around back then, he would have been bullhorning sit-ins about how they're funded by the Rothschilds or some
shit.
On a larger level, the situation with the unvaccinated has literally no similarity to the treatment of black people in America. The suggestion is offensive on its face, and it's an indication only of Alex's racist brain and his desire to aggrandize his own imagined suffering while minimizing the legitimate struggle faced by people who don't look like him.
Yep.
I would encourage him to provide literally any examples of people who've been arrested for not getting vaccinated, and then after that he can demonstrate how a majority of them are black. As far as I know and can tell, no one has been arrested for not getting vaccinated. Some people have been arrested for refusing to leave places that require vaccination after they've been asked to leave, but Alex should be in favor of that, since those businesses and their owners should have the right of free association to serve whichever customers they want. If you'll recall, Alex was super in favor of that bakery not making a gay couple a wedding cake.
Right.
There have been some people who've also been arrested for having or distributing fake vaccination cards, which is just forgery of official documents.
Fraud's a crime now?
I guess it is.
Oh, fine. I called it mischief, but now we're in a crime.
Right. And this is actually one of the ways I think you can see here that Alex wastes everyone's fucking time. Because he's making these declarative statements that people are getting arrested for not getting vaccinated, yeah, and a majority of them are black.
Yeah.
And now it's upon you to go and find any instances of...
Period.
Yeah. And it's a wild goose chase that you end up going on if you are expected to assess the information that Alex is providing.
Right.
And it's a trap. It's a time-wasting trap. And he does that intentionally.
And not least of which, you're not just going to blanket search for... unvaccinated people arrested. You're going to search for like black unvaccinated people arrested. He's narrowing the search down so you won't even try and look for a broader.
But it's not even unvaccinated people that are arrested that's at issue. It's people who are arrested for not getting vaccinated.
Yeah, again, there's no way to even follow it up.
Is that a law?
Yeah, of course not. Yes? No.
So we have one more clip from Pawlowski's son
He has not stood trial. What happened to the notion innocent until proven guilty? What happened to due process? He's being punished for something he has not been convicted of.
Well, this is martial law. This is they disappear political prisoners and don't let them out on bail. That's martial law.
Yeah, exactly.
No. So the courts in Canada are not presuming Pawlowski guilty of the offense that he was arrested for. They used his past pattern of behavior to decide that he was a person with a high likelihood, almost a certainty, of reoffending if released, so he's denied bail. That's not presuming him guilty before trial.
Right. No, he was innocent of being a consistent nuisance to society until he was then convicted guilty of being a consistent nuisance to society. Mm-hmm. And then later on, whenever he gets caught up again, they're like, you're a consistent nuisance to society. We already proved it. No bail.
And he's also getting his due process rights. Like, he hasn't had his full trial yet, but they didn't just say no bail for you and slam the door in his face. That decision was made at a bail hearing.
Yeah.
This is nonsense. It's total bullshit.
Insane.
And now, again, Alex doesn't seem to have any idea what martial law actually means. One, and for one, by that I mean me, I get the feeling that Alex's understanding of what martial law is comes mostly from, like, dystopian movies.
Yeah, almost entirely.
I think that maybe he watched The Last Duel and is like, that's martial law.
That's not a dystopian movie. It's a Ridley Scott history movie about two knights.
It's dystopian in as much as Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are both in it.
Is Ben Affleck in it?
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah. I know that because I looked at the Wikipedia page earlier.
Huh, weird.
Yeah.
I will be honest, like most Ridley Scott historical epics, it's very long.
Like Alien?
No, like Kingdom of Heaven. Kingdom of Heaven, the director's cut?
Yeah, that one
cut,
was long.
That's like 4.5 hours,
yeah,
man.
That's too long.
Yeah, that's too long. Still good. I actually really like it. But
that's great.
Too long.
I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
We all like what we like.
Indeed.
Something I don't like.
The Last Duel?
Sure.
I guess we'll have
Sight
to have
unseen,
one.
I don't like that movie. Another thing I don't like is Alex's next guest. Oh, what a asshole.
The only reason we're still live on air and the only reason we are millions and millions of unstoppable watts just in AM and FM and shortwave stations around the world is because of you. What have I told you? World government's making its move. Not out of strength, but out of weakness. And now that the thermonuclear war clock is 2 minutes to midnight, David Icke, the most prolific individual, the trailblazer, the most accurate person.
Really?
You know, you see the bumper stickers everywhere. Alex Jones was right. Well, David Icke was right first.
The turd and the punch
prophetic.
Bowl.
We're honored to have him here with us for the next,
70, 80 minutes as long as he can stay with us.
That's honestly degrading for Alex to be saying. Mm-hmm. What a complete loser, putting himself second to David Icke of all people, someone who he rightly saw as a charlatan in his early career.
Yep.
I get the sense that Alex is doing this in order to create the false appearance that he and David Icke were on the same page early on, since that kind of lends a bit of false credibility to the idea that they were both predicting what is happening in the world today. You're on a unified front early on.
Right.
Whatever. That's absolutely not true, and anyone who spent even a little bit of time engaging with their material knows that. You know, the thing that's absolutely pathetic about this is the very clear power imbalance that is totally clear but entirely unspoken. David Icke exists here as a guy who hasn't changed his core branding, but the same isn't true for Alex.
Mm-mm.
Alex hated David Icke early in his career, but now has had to adopt pretty much all of Icke's worldview in order to keep up with the rapidly escalating insanity in the conspiracy community.
Yeah.
David Icke was the turd in the punch bowl with his interdimensional lizard beings back in the day, when Alex was the real shit, talking about the banks and the UN. Alex was always no better than David Icke. It's just now he realizes he's not capable of maintaining a brand where he tries to pretend that he is. Meanwhile, David Icke is as crazy as he's ever been, and his brand is entirely able to take or leave Alex. He won in terms of these two.
His brand is fucking impenetrable at this point.
He's made enough of a cottage industry for himself that he doesn't really need anybody else. He can sell out weird speaking engagements and sell books. And
he's a little bit like a passive cult leader. Like, he doesn't have to have those, like, he doesn't tell you to go get him shit all the time, but he'll just show up and people will be like, oh my God, you're amazing.
Yeah, and I think that he made a name for himself as being completely crazy at a time when there weren't enough public crazy figures. He was early in on the game.
He's the grandfather,
and he was a famous person prior to that in England.
True.
So, like, when he went on TV and said he was the son of God, like, it was ridiculously huge.
Yeah.
You know, so coming from that kind of an inciting incident into this career in, like, Lizards Walk Among Us.
Yeah.
Like, there's a built-in thing that will allow you to have, like, fuck-off kind of money in your brand.
Yeah.
You know, he has his own thing, and Alex is so pathetic that he just has to be like, he can't stick to his guns.
No.
Because there's no money in being like, aha, yes.
Right.
Everyone else is getting sucked into QAnon stuff. Everyone else is getting sucked into these interdimensional demons and what have you. And I want to hold the line and tell you about how great Rand Paul's fiscal ideas are. And you know what? We need to reduce foreign aid. And while we're on the subject, let's get rid of OSHA.
Ooh, boy.
And let's audit the Fed.
That's
a good idea. That'll get people excited. Let's audit the Fed.
Are there any lizards there?
No, you have to talk about demons and shit.
Yep.
So Alex has had to completely sacrifice whatever air of, like, I'm better than this that he once had, that sort of facade. And what's left is David Icke laughing. Except he's not, because I don't think David Icke gives a shit, honestly.
I don't know what drives that guy. That's something I don't want to.
I think it's actually he's mentally unwell.
I think so, too. Yes. But that can't just be it. People wouldn't engage in a decades-long,
I think he's just really
fucking enabling of, oh, wait, no, yeah, they would.
Yeah, I think I don't know exactly what it is, but there's something that's, I think, he has a problem. Also, if Alex thinks that David Icke is right all along, unfortunately, that's basically him saying that he believes the protocols of the Elders of Zion are real, because David Icke has pushed that quite a bit.
Great.
So, congratulations, Alex. Anyway, Icke, he's into these truckers. He likes the Canadian protest.
Are they like Icke?
Uh-huh.
Also, you see, what the truckers have done is to produce the biggest threat of all to this cult. And that's the threat of a good example. If you can do what they've done and the Canadian government has to admit that they can't impose these vaccine mandates because of public pressure and all this stuff, and so they say, okay, well, we'll do what you want, then that is a massive, massive statement to the rest of the world
that the people have the power.
that the people have the power.
This isn't a legitimate power of the people situation. Like, if anything, the protests prove that a relatively small number of people who act strategically can unsuccessfully attempt to force their will on a much larger population who doesn't support them if they're willing to take extreme measures. And the outcome of it will be annoying a ton of people and wasting everyone's time for a while.
You can do it.
Essentially, they've proved the efficacy of terrorism. So congratulations on that, I guess. Great. That's not power of the people. That's the opposite.
No, we just want to terrorize people into giving up on what they believe is right.
Right. And overthrowing their elected leader.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
I don't understand what your problem here is, right?
Yeah, these people are stupid.
Yeah.
Anyway, they want
to- It is so funny to me that the people who screamed at me after 9/11 about how patriotism is so important are fucking terrorists now.
Well, to be fair, that wouldn't have been Alex.
That's true.
Alex would not have been yelling about patriotism in the aftermath of 9/11.
That's true.
But other people, probably.
Yeah.
So these dudes, Alex and David Icke, they, I think, are invested in trying to reheat the situation in Canada.
What happens if millions of Canadians seeing these horrible images march peacefully now? Would that finally break the will of this tyranny? Is that the answer?
Alex, that's what has to happen. You know, people in Canada who are looking from the sidelines who could get there. What are you doing? What you're seeing is not just your future disappearing into a fascist tyranny, but your kids and your grandkids into an even deeper one.
So Alex and David want tons of people to show up and are presenting that it's the solution to world tyranny because they're disappointed that the protests are getting cleared without any real major incident happening that they can profit from exploiting. Alex didn't get that false flag car bomb that he was hoping for, so he's having to try to do the best he can with, you know, the completely false and pretty underwhelming narrative about organizers getting arrested without charges. That's not exciting, and also, if anyone takes the time to look into it, they just see that Alex is making it up. The answer to this propaganda narrative dead end that they're facing is the prospect of adding more fuel to the fire in the form of tons of people showing up energized and convinced that stopping the clearing of the protests is the solution to world tyranny being established. That would have a high probability of causing some kind of a flare-up, which is what these dudes want. This isn't going to happen because I doubt there are millions of people in Canada that support the protests. A poll came out on the 14th showing that 72% of Canadians wanted the protesters to, quote, go home now. 44% of the said that the protests, quote, made them more inclined to support measures like indoor masking and showing proof of vaccination at the Canada-US border. So in some sense, you could look at the protests as being counterproductive, like maybe they backfired.
Mm.
I don't know. Certainly didn't achieve whatever goals they wanted to, unless the goals were enrichment of some really shitty grifters and getting a ton of attention for some shady folks.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we're missing out on another huge, crucial aspect of this is that this is all happening where it can't really affect Alex or David at all. So they get to get the pride and power of saying, you guys go shut down this whole place with knowing that nothing bad will happen to them.
Probably not.
Yep.
I mean, the only real possibility is if those blockades lasted long enough to have a severe impact on goods and services flow, and it did disrupt the supply chain in some way, or if it ended up reaching a situation where the sort of strategy migrated to the United States, and you know, major thoroughfares and trade routes were blocked, then you could see Alex getting affected. But I don't think even he thinks that it would ever get to that point.
No. I mean, I think the Queen will have to, of course, just take Canada back. That'll be the first thing that goes.
That's the illusion that she's not in charge.
Well, I mean, if they want to get rid of Trudeau, there's only one way to do it, and that's give it back to the Queen.
Well, see, but that's why Trudeau gave the Queen COVID.
Oh, Trudeau, you clever bastard. I've read your book.
Always one step ahead. Trudeau. So, they just want to try and scare people into, like, you need to go and stop the stopping of the protests.
Whatever, yeah.
What we are looking at now is decision time. You know, are we going to capitulate and look at a ongoing future in which what you're seeing on the screen from Ottawa is the norm, or are we going to draw a line in the sand? Because I've said so many times, what is coming, what is planned, is far, far, far worse and more extreme than anything you can imagine in terms of the consequences of standing up now. When people say, oh yeah, but what are the consequences for me of doing this? Well, I can tell you the consequences of not doing it are enormously greater.
So I guess you should at all costs defend these protests.
I mean, yeah, you have to be willing to give up your life at the border of Canada and America in Ottawa to get people to stop the to get the thing that they want, which is to really achieve that.
So he's speaking pretty passionately about how, like, it's nightmarish. Whatever is going to happen is
right.
So much worse than you could possibly even imagine.
Anything you can imagine.
And then this happens, which is really, really funny.
Well, David, I don't want to interrupt you because I've known you at least 25 years, and I've never seen you this upset and I'm crying on air. I feel the
is
same
he crying?
Way. Why are you crying on air right
Why
now?
Why are you crying?
Well, I'm not actually crying. I've got a frog in my throat. That's what's made my eyes go. But I could be crying.
Would you like me to?
All right, crazy Michael Caine. Thanks for that.
Yeah, that's so great. Alex trying to like really like, yes, you're crying. Man. What's going on here? I'm not crying, but I could.
I could be. I'll cry.
What a bunch of idiots.
I'll cry for free.
So this next clip is one of my favorite genres of Alex questions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the question that is meant to subtly inflate Alex along the way.
Right.
It's just gorgeous.
What is it like for you, David Icke? Because I know you want to talk about the world and what's happening currently, but just you as such an iconic person. I'm not trying to say I'm like super iconic, but who is out there? There's like, you know, David Icke and Alex Jones are like in the fight against the globalists, the most preeminent, which is a dangerous position. I can't believe it. It's surreal. But what is it like to know this is all coming for 30 years or so? You've been on 30-something years, 32 years or so you've been fighting these people. So I was following you 3 or 4 years into your awakening.
Hey, David.
Oh, boy.
What is it like to be an icon like me?
Hey, David. We're both huge. We're both so big. I love you. But me most. I like me the most. I'm not saying I'm bigger than you. I'm just saying that the two names are you and me. And me is first.
And what is it like to be in that rarefied air of
What's it like
you
to be
me?
With me? What's it like to be with me in this rarefied air of you and me?
I do love that. That's a lot of fun.
That's so annoying.
So David Icke gets talking about Satan.
Sure.
He has a bit of a feeling about Satan being fear.
Hmm.
I would say this consciousness, this Wetiko, this Satan is fear. That's what it is. Because it's fear, it feeds off fear. And so it has to pull its targets into states of fear, because then not only can it control them, because they're...
And that's why they want to start wars and threats of wars. It's always getting the fear, getting that energy.
That's what you're looking at now with this thing with Russia. It's what you're looking at with the thing with China. It's what you're looking at with Canada. And what we need to do is to rise above that and not allow fear and intimidation to impose itself upon us.
That's right. Stay there, David.
That's so dumb.
The only thing we have to fear is the devil, because the devil is fear.
And
every fear you have makes the devil stronger.
And what do we know about fear?
Oh, it's the devil.
It's the mind killer.
Oh, God damn it.
Come on, man.
I'm sorry. I wasn't ready for a Dune reference.
Wow.
I wasn't there. My litany against fear wasn't there.
I think that's stupid. For one thing, I think it's, you know, it's built on the like bedrock of something that is obviously a trite but true point, which is, you know, fear is not really a productive state of mind to be in.
Right.
And, you know, trying to combat fears is always usually a positive exercise.
Yeah.
That said, the situation in Canada and the situation in Ukraine are not just to make David Icke scared. That's not what this is about.
Sure.
There are other things going on that are real.
Are they important things, though?
Yeah.
Like, things more important than whether or not David Icke is afraid?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
For sure.
Wow, that must be pretty serious, then.
I understand this impulse on the part of conspiracy theorists to be like, everybody's just trying to make you scared in order to keep you controlled and what have you. And fine, but also the things that are happening in the world are real. And to not deal with that seems escapist in some ways. And I would flip it around on them. If this is like, you know, the globalists are just trying to make you scared about these situations, what are you doing?
Shaking in fear.
No, but you're also trying to make your audience scared.
Yeah. Well, if I'm shaking in fear, they better be.
Right. So if the globalist strategy or whatever is to gain control by spreading fear.
Right. I'm spreading that fear for them.
Right, to keep control of your audience, right?
Right.
Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, because I need to control...
to doing?
No, I need to control my audience with fear.
Ridiculous.
Oh, I'm starting to see why you think that this is bad.
Uh-huh.
I'm starting... No. I'm putting it together. Let me argue for it.
Okay.
I'm scary.
So, David Icke is a prophet.
Okay.
That hurt to say.
Yeah.
I agree. Really, so what are they going to do now as they act like they're pulling back? Well, what comes next?
Well, you know, there's I have this phrase, know the outcome and you'll see the journey.
Great phrase.
So we know what the outcomes plan to be, total global control and at the end of countries and the connection of the human brain body to AI and all of that. So that is not gone away. That's the goal. How they get there is they'll have a plan, but they're going to have to change it here and there.
Oops, David Icke just gave up the game.
Wow.
He's basically saying that he's created an imagined end state that he sees things going towards, and his plan is to take everything that happens in the world and find ways to explain every event as being part of the plan advancing towards that end state. That's actually pretty smart in terms of how to be a really lazy prophet, because you aren't committing to any specific things happening, and thus you're not really ever at risk of people saying you're wrong unless your end state fails to ever come into being. But you can always say that the villains are still working towards that end state and their plans are behind, maybe like 10 years behind, as we've heard Alex say so much.
The best way to get a good prophecy out there is to die before it hits fruition. You know, like, nobody's going to be like, dude, fucking John, there were only 5 SEALs. You said there were going to be 7. You dick.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no one's going to do that.
If you've bought into David Icke's shit, you might hear what he's saying as a reasonable response. But to me, that sounds like a clear admission that David Icke just makes stuff up as he's going along. He sees world events and incorporates them into the larger narrative that he has about the world, fudging details if he has to, oversimplifying things when necessary, and then just outright ignoring tons of stuff that he can't make fit the mold. The only real question for me is whether he's aware of what he's doing and he's like a conscious con man in this, or if he's just mentally unwell to the point where this is an unconscious process and how he actually experiences the world.
Yeah,
I'm not sure, but I think it's really, really telling that, like, what's next? Ah, let me tell you, I know the end point and I will figure it out along the way.
Yeah, I mean, that's aspirational prophecy. Like, I know where the end is going. So, like, what are you talking about if you know where the end is going?
Well, I mean, it's essentially like one method of storytelling is like, you know what the conclusion of the story is going to be. And then along the way, you write how the characters get to that end point.
Yes, I know. But see, that's the problem. That's too transparently what's going on.
Yeah.
No other use of that framing device. That's not a way to.
No.
God damn it.
Of course.
A back to front program is. Whatever.
Yep. Anyway, good stuff, Dave.
Great.
Anyway, there's an inherent problem with a lot of the vaccine conspiracies that are going around, and that is that they're not killing everybody.
That is a big issue with the conspiracy.
When it's supposed to kill everybody, right?
You're dead.
Yeah. So David Icke, thankfully, has a workaround about this.
Well, that's helpful.
What do you, from your research, know is in the vaccine, the so-called vaccine, and where does this go?
Well, they're doing it in a way that seeks to keep the levels of people dying, certainly in these earlier in this earlier period, to a level, catastrophic as it is, where they can kind of keep some kind of lid on it as best they can. And to do that, enormous numbers of these vials are actually just saline solution.
Ha-ha! Most of the vaccines are nothing. That's not real.
That is such a bullshit fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
But that's the way.
I know, but there's no number. That idea of like, well, it's still catastrophic, but this is reasonable. Right. How dare you tell me that there's a balance between catastrophic and reasonable that is struck?
That point is well taken, but you also got to take a look back and listen to that last clip and recognize what he's doing here. He has the end point that he has written, and that is that the vaccines are going to kill everybody.
Right.
And now there are events that are happening, and he's had to write little details.
They had to change their plans because it didn't kill everybody quick enough.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or there are new details that he needs to incorporate.
He needs to rewrite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. They sent out saline solution for most of the vaccines, which is the explanation for why it's not killing everybody in the way that I have already said my end point is.
Sure.
So the end point is actually correct, but most people aren't actually getting the vaccine. Therefore, I am right.
The fun thing about an end point where you don't know how we get there is that you can always move that endpoint wherever you want it to go.
Or you can create illusions of definitions.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can redefine things. So anyway, Alex, he remembers, oh yeah, I think most vaccines are fake too.
Nice.
By the way, David, I got to interrupt you and give you credit. I remember you 6-8 months ago or so saying, most of this is saline. They're only targeting old people and military and certain groups with it. And then now they had major top scientists go off the government's own data and show that they're actually targeting conservative and nationalist and awake sectors with the poison shots. They actually were able to map it out. Gregory said a report on it showing it. So what you said 8, 9, 10 months ago, I forget, it was a long time ago, actually came true. Exactly.
So I watched that Greg Reese video when he put it out last month, and honestly, it was so dumb that I didn't even take the time to engage with it. I guess now that Alex is bringing it up to defend some dumb shit that David Icke is saying, I'll talk about it a little. In January, Reese put out a video titled, "Evidence That U.S. Government Targeted Red States with Deadly Batches of Vaccine." This report was based on a website that a guy named Craig Partikooper threw together called How Bad Is My Batch? This site purports to show how many deaths and side effects are associated with each batch of the vaccines.
Oh, my God.
Listed by batch number. That information was then taken and interpreted to show that the most deadly and side effect riddled batches were being sent to red states. This data is all entirely pulled from VAERS data, so it's not even confirmed that these adverse events happened, and the data isn't meant to be used that way. So right off the bat, you can't reach any of the conclusions that Greg Reese's video does from this data set. Already, this is stupid. But it gets even more idiotic when you realize what VAERS data is. It's self-reporting of side effects that may or may not be real. All this data would actually be showing is that in red states, there are a higher incidence of self-reporting of side effects that may or may not be real. And if they are real, may or may not be related to the vaccine at all. That kind of makes sense to me, given how largely anti-vax the conservative community has become in the last few years. I could see them having a greater tendency to overreport possible side effects to VAERS, or for some people to actually be inclined to file false reports. That data could then be used by someone like Partikooper, and then Greg Reese, and then Alex and David Icke to argue that vaccines are deadly and they're being sent to conservative areas while the rest of the world and the country gets placebos. And this is a rebuttal that even just takes for granted the data Partikooper extracted from VAERS being accurate in its presentation.
Yeah.
I'm just deciding to stipulate that it is because I don't care whether it's accurate or not. It actually makes no difference in terms of the conclusions.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous thing that has potential other explanations, even if what's being presented as data is accurate.
I'm starting to feel like our show is like the Black Mirror version of Schoolhouse Rock. Like when you hear that song about how I'm just a bill, and
right.
You see it go from nothing into law, and you're like, I feel like I've learned something about the process here. Mm. Learning about the process of bullshit is really what's going on.
Right, and you fucked a pig once.
I did fuck a pig once. But that was only because terrorists asked me not to.
Right. So this is a truly insane website, complete with suggestions of how to cure yourself of the vaccine, and Alex is able to use it to push his dumb conspiracies. And a key element of this is the laundering process. Here we go, Schoolhouse Rock theme song. This is just a misuse of VAERS data at its core. It's meaningless on its own, but it gets misrepresented and misinterpreted on this website, and it starts to take a little bit of a shape. But this website is still pretty inaccessible to most people. If you're not already on board with the conspiracy shit, you're going to see that, and you're not going to be swayed. It's going to be like, all right, whatever. So Greg Reese comes in, and he makes a slick video packaging the claims of this website in a form that has the ability to scare and intrigue people. This video is also something that Alex can use, because the site itself is too formless for Alex to really get a grasp on. There's no holds for him to grab onto. He needs concise talking points, as opposed to a sprawling website full of insane nonsense. Reese's video provides him with those talking points, and he can go forward from there. Also, like, let's be clear. What David Icke was saying 8 months ago wasn't that the vaccine wasn't real. He was saying that COVID didn't exist. There was no virus, and maybe viruses don't exist.
Yep.
That was his take back then, but I guess Alex doesn't want to get into that, lest he have to choose between agreeing with that or bringing up something that David Icke said that looks really fucking stupid. So, I think you can see the sort of the I don't know, the chain
I'm
of...
I'm just a lie.
Well, I mean, what is it, the chain of evidence?
Yeah.
You know, you see the way that it's chiseled into something that can be usable.
Yeah, no,
but
it is.
At its core, what it is still the same shit. It's
right.
Just VAERS data being dressed up in a certain way.
Right. It's like a manufacturing process. It's literally like you've got this raw material that then gets refined and refined and refined and refined until you have the diamond of bullshit that Alex gets to say.
Yes. My only clarification I would make is that, like, you know, when you look at a manufacturing process, it's usually the repeat of the same thing over and over again. Whereas in order to make this usable for propagandists, you usually have to do a slightly different process each time.
Right.
You're doing the same thing, essentially,
right.
But you need to make it look different each time.
It's more of an art than it is a science.
Yes, that's true. Bullshitting. So we have one last clip here, and it's Alex waxing poetic about how David Icke. We may never speak again.
And I hope we're here a year later, 10 years from now. I hope we turn this around quickly. Hope things can be crash-landed in a safe way. But I think it is fair to say parting is such sweet sorrow. This could be the last time you and I ever talk, but our spirits are eternal. This could be the last time we're ever on air. Today, next week, next month, we're in that area. We're in that house of total censorship. And I don't let my enemies have the enjoyment to hear about what they're doing behind the scenes, but I'm sure you've gone through some similar things. It's been very intense. The attacks have been much more intense. We're barely on air right now. And I've had, like, family members that have cancer, and you're like, oh, your uncle, he's all right. He's got cancer. He's dead. You know, it's kind of like they don't make a big deal about it. It's just suddenly they're gone.
I love the idea that Alex is comparing himself to, like, a family member has cancer who's just gone one day. Like, he hasn't been yelling about how his show could be, everyone could be his last show for, like, the last year.
Yeah.
He's like a family member who yells at you constantly about how they're about to die, then tries to sell you something you don't need in order to keep them alive. And also, it turns out their life-threatening condition that they have is a cut they gave themselves while trying to stab a random person on the street.
Yep.
They did it to themselves. They're not really dying.
Nope.
They keep trying to sell you things to keep them alive. It's such bullshit.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm a noble person who doesn't want to burden people with my illness or whatever. That's what he's trying to metaphorically describe InfoWars as.
Of course.
Fuck
you. He's just that type of person who's just there and then gone. You know, he doesn't make a fuss out of what is he going to be?
Shit.
My aunt died of colon cancer. You know, I'm sure he never would have complained about the pain.
Mm.
She was a hard, strong woman, and I'm sure Alex is just like her.
Just such,
right?
such
similar.
Shit.
Yeah.
That show could be my last. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Fuck you. I want to go to the woods.
Fucking Christ. You're just a child who doesn't want to take responsibility for his actions.
Yeah.
How is that a thing that you can be at 40?
And a intellectual child who just... you know, bases essentially all of his worldview on dumb shit that he read when he was younger and hasn't updated really any of it.
Yeah.
Hangs out with ding-dongs like David Icke who admit that they're just doing improvised storytelling to create a worldview and conspiracies along the way. This is fucking nonsense.
It is like whenever this stuff happens, it is a little bit like when I was younger. I loved reading books when I was a kid. I'd read these books, and there was always that line that, like, everything you think you know is not how it works.
Right.
You know? And I was always excited by that because it meant that the mundane, boring aspects of life were about to be transformed into something special.
Sure.
This show is like that. It's like everything you thought about how the world worked, it doesn't work like that. And I'm not excited because it is so much dumber than I could ever have possibly thought. Like, a level of intelligence required to run a school just on a functional level as a principal is far beyond anything that these people have ever considered.
True.
And they're the president of the United States or whatever the fuck it is. You know, like, everywhere we go, they're the people who actually run shit, and it's insane.
But I think not to defend the president of the United States, let's say, but I think you're not taking into account the complications of that job.
That's why they've got a bunch of other people to do it for them. The people are crazy.
Right. There's vice principals,
exactly,
too. So.
No, those guys are crazy.
I get what you're saying, but I don't know. I heard you, and I was thinking more like, yes, Alex is very stupid. And it is remarkable.
It really is. It really is.
But it really goes to show how much a bit of talent and rampant narcissism,
gall,
and unending confidence, how much that can mask itself, even over the course of decades, as expertise,
right,
intelligence. Like, those things are the facade that hide the lack of those things.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of talent and yelling a bunch so people are afraid to confront you about things.
Yeah, but you got to be real stupid to believe Putin on this one. Just this one's too bad.
Yep.
This one's too dumb.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be real dumb for this one.
Mm-hmm.
No benefit of the doubt. No, like, hey, we've all made mistakes before. No.
Mm-hmm.
Russia, this is you can't do this one. Just not this one.
It seems like a tough thing to accept, unless that's been what you've been doing for your entire career, or at least most of it, and especially lately.
Tough to change now.
Yep. So anyway, Jordan, we'll be back. I think I'm going to take a little breaky, probably on Wednesday.
I think that's a good idea.
But anyway, we will be back. Jordan, but until then, we have a website.
We do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight, and I go to bed, Jordan.
Yep. We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I'm Dr. Marbles.
And now here comes the sex robot.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.